Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Before we get started with today's episode, we just wanted to let you know that if you are interested in trying audiobooks or have been eyeing an Audible membership, you can get 2 free audiobooks when you sign up for a free trial at bookriot.com/audible. Most free trial offers for Audible only give you 1 download with your 30-day trial, but we are giving you 2. Audiobooks are a great way to work more reading into your life, whether it's during your commute, while you're cooking, while you're at the gym, or whatever. So go to bookriot.com/audible to sign up for your free trial and get 2 free audiobooks. This is the Get Booked Podcast, a weekly show for personalized reading recommendations. This is episode 169, and we are recording on February 19th. I'm Jen Northington, and I'm here with Sarah Davis, and we are coming to you from Book Riot. Hello.
Hi.
So, Sarah, you are both a contributor and a bibliologist for our TBR, Tailored Book Recommendations Service. Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So, as a bibliologist, I'll receive a request from someone. It could be either for recommendations only or for hardcover. And if they choose hardcover, they'll get 3 hardcover new releases. So then people can give you feedback based on what you've recommended before. And it's a really nice mix of what people ask for, because sometimes what they're looking for is something really specific. And those are always both challenging and fun to find something for. And sometimes people will want something that's a little bit more in their comfort zone. And I also really like taking requests from people who want to push themselves outside what they already know, whether they're looking for more diverse books or they're looking to try a new genre. And so you use your kind of bibliologist to reader's advisory magical powers to recommend 3 books. And it's a really great service. I think people appreciate the personalized aspect of it, because you really do kind of feel like they're little, like, concierge in a way. You know, you're dedicated to helping them and, you know, working with someone on their individualized reading preferences. And so, yeah, I really enjoy it.
And I heard you say reader's advisory. You're a librarian, right?
I am a non-practicing librarian. I have my master's in library science, but I'm actually not working in libraries right now. But I get to use a lot of those reader's advisory skills anyway through Get Booked or writing for Book Riot. So not in a library per se.
Gotcha.
A wider library of the world.
Well, I love that. That's great. And let's see, what are you reading right now?
I am reading a book called The Night Ocean by Paul Lafarge. And I actually wrote an article recently for Book Riot on cosmic horror, which was a new sci-fi genre for me to learn about. It's basically kind of like inherited from Lovecraft. And in doing that, I got to read about like a lot of contemporary works that draw on his kind of cosmos, but also I guess like reinterpreting it and looking at ways to kind of liberate people from his really rather very problematic background. So this book is it's a contemporary novel, and it grapples with H.P. Lovecraft's legacy head on, but also through kind of like a psychological suspense way. So I'm really digging it so far.
Awesome. Speaking of libraries, my library hold on Washington Black by Essie Adugian just came in, and I have been waiting for this book for like a year, it feels like.
Yeah, that's on my TBR.
Yeah, it won so many awards, and I heard so many amazing rave reviews about it from other Book Riot people and just all over the internet, and I feel very behind that I haven't read it yet. So I'm going to try, y'all. I'm going to try. I have a plane ride coming up, so I might bring it with me for that, because I don't know about you, but I often can knock out a book on a plane.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's see. If this is the first time you're tuning in, as we said at the top, this is a reading recommendation show, which means that y'all send us in your questions about what you should read next, what your book club might want to read next, what you should get as a gift for a friend or family member. We will do our best, including our pets, to find a good pick for you. And so you can send those recommendations in two ways. You can either email them to us. It's getbooked@bookriot.com, or you can drop them into the form that's at the bottom of the show notes on the site for every show. And if you send in a question that is time sensitive, please do let us know when you're hoping to have the answer back by. We'll do our best. If we don't think we're going to get to it on air, we will send you maybe an email response. And if you've asked a question that we've answered before, we might also send you an email. So keep an eye out for those. I'm going to read our first question and then tell you about our first sponsor, and then away we will go. This question is from Tracy, who says, my book club is working on compiling a list of our upcoming books by the end of February. We've had a lot of books that really hurt the momentum of our group and recently have had a streak of really great books that have gotten us all excited again. The books we have enjoyed are The Rosie Project, Artemis, Joyful, They Both Die at the End, and Between the World and Me. The books that have made us collectively lose steam are The Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, Desert Solitaire, and Lord of Misrule. Do you have any suggestions for us? We enjoy both nonfiction and fiction. And yeah, great question. But before we talk about that, I want to talk about our sponsor, Every Plate, which is one of those excellent sort of meal in a box value meal kits. They show up at your door and they have all of the ingredients that you need to make dinner. And these are a cheaper, healthier alternative to takeout or delivery. Other dinner options cost around like $10 per serving, but Every Plate is offering 5 chef-designed recipes each week from only $4.99 per serving, which is, you know, I'd easily spend that on coffee or a Danish every day. So a dinner for that price is a very good deal. And the recipes are easy to follow. They come together in about 30 minutes, so you can get back to enjoying your time in front of the TV or reading books or whatever it is that you would rather be doing. And the Every Plate recipes come already pre-measured, so they are basically doing the meal planning, shopping, and preparing for you. I did get my box in the mail. I regret that my life has been so busy that I have not even had 30 minutes to cook. But I am really pleased with the selection of options. And I also thought the website was really easy to use and very clear and very simple. This is the really straightforward, simplified version of a lot of the meal kits out there, which can get a little complicated. So if you are interested in getting meals delivered right to you very easily, very cheaply, you should check this out. The first 6 meals across your first 3 weeks. Oh, you can get six free meals across your first 3 weeks and free shipping on your first delivery if you go to everyplate.com and enter code BOOKED6. That's BOOKED, the number 6. And this offer equates to 1/3 off of each of your first 3 boxes. And again, go to everyplate.com and enter code BOOKED6. That's BOOKED 6. All right, so let's see. So the question was books that will keep a book club going full steam ahead. This is definitely a tricky one. Sarah, what do you got for this?
Well, I totally understand when this happens. I ran a book club for about 2 years, and I have to say, you could definitely feel when the air goes out of the room. And some books are just, they don't give you that kind of good discussion nuggets that engage people. And actually, The Art of Motorcycle Maintenance was, we had a similar effect in our group. So what I am recommending is The Perfect Nanny by Leila Slimani. And this book, if you haven't heard about it yet, it received a lot of attention last year. It was one of the New York Times' 10 best books of the year. And it's this very chilling look at class, gender, kind of maternal responsibility through the story of this young couple who have 2 kids, and the mother feels a desire to go back to work. So she hires this woman who seems like the perfect nanny, and it's almost kind of like like an anti-Mary Poppins in a way, because this woman has a lot of issues that she's bringing to it. But their relationship becomes kind of codependent and eventually quite toxic. And I'd recommend this book because it challenges ideas of culpability, you know, who you think is more responsible for something spiraling out of control, and also just the idea that how these dynamics can be passed on to the children too. So I think it's got a lot of great discussion starters in there about, you know, what is right, what is wrong, what can we stop, what can't we stop, and how do we get ourselves out of these situations if a lot of our personal guilt is driving those decisions. So I'd recommend that, and I'd actually like to put in a little plug for an article I wrote in December, 10 New Controversial Books to Shake Up Your Book Club, and that was one of them. So that's, yeah, I would say enjoy, but, you know, be ready to talk about it.
Yeah, that's the ideal book club book, right? Is one where you like, it's fun, but then also I have a million things I want to say about it.
Yeah.
Let's see. So I picked Disoriental by Nigar Javadi, translated by Tina Cover, which was one of my favorite books of 2018. It just was so amazing. And it's a really powerful novel. It is also based on the author's own experiences. But it is about a young girl named Kimia who flees Iran at the age of 10 with her mother and sisters to join her father in France. You're getting both her childhood in Iran and then her adulthood in France. So the adulthood timeline, she's about 25. She is working on getting pregnant and having a kid. And she's going through this very intense life transitional moment. And so she is sort of re-experiencing this trauma of her childhood, as well as the good parts of her childhood. And then also you're getting sort of this almost like family lore that goes back to, you know, the generations before Kimia and sort of gives context for the family and why it is the way it is and how they got to where they are today. And it's just so good. Oh man, I fell so hard for these characters. Kimia is an amazing narrator and the stories are so rich and the settings are so rich and you really feel so connected through all of the like triumphs and troubles of this family. And it is a rough book in a lot of ways because, you know, this was a very intense moment, violent moment in the history of Iran. And her family experiences a lot of that. And so, you know, it's like you're definitely, there are sections that are real page turners. And then there are other sections that are sort of these meandery, you know, once upon a time, like your great, great grandfather, you know, found this woman at the market. And it's like these like sort of like, yeah, like little like interspersal moments of different kinds of storytelling. So there's a lot of different things going on structurally. It's also a beautiful contemporary queer family story. And yeah, it's about immigration and refugees and what does it mean to have a family and what does it mean to be part of a family and how do you choose your own? And how do you deal with the trauma of, you know, your childhood as an adult who is now thinking about having a child. So there's a lot going on in here. There's tons to discuss. And I do think the writing, you know, sucks you in. The structure may not be necessarily easy for everyone because it's not linear, but I think that it flows really beautifully and it should keep you going. And there's just tons to talk about. So again, that's Disoriental by Nigar Javadi, translated by Tina Cover.
Cool. Second question. Hey there. I've been a longtime fan of your podcast, but this is the first time I'm actually looking for a personal recommendation. Recently, I've read The Crane's Dance by Meg Howry, and I immediately fell in love. Ever since, I've been trying to find books that deal with similar topics or themes, but nothing managed to live up to it. So here's what I'm looking for. Books dealing with ballet or any kind of activity the main character is really obsessed with. I'm open to ideas. Books that talk about some more philosophical ideas that don't go over one's head, character-driven stories and a strong character voice, preferably from a female point of view. I already have Sally Rooney's books on my TBR. I read Donna Tartt, Elena Ferrante, and My Year of Rest and Relaxation. Any ideas what I should pick up next? Thanks, Olivia.
What did you pick for this one?
I picked Sweet Bitter by Stephanie Danler, which I read a couple of years ago, and I just, I loved it. It was one of those books that I stayed up way, way, way too late to read, like 3 in the morning. I was just like, oh my God, I don't want to lose this world. So in this novel, Tess is a young 20-something, and she wants to move to New York and escape her home. And you don't really quite know what she's leaving behind. You just know that she really wants to start over and start fresh in New York. So she takes the first job that she can, that she's offered, which is in a high-end restaurant. She's a low-ranking member of the wait staff, and she becomes just transported into this world of food, and then the family kind of community aspect that's really tight-knit around the staff of the restaurant and then the cooks too. But moreover, she becomes kind of fixated on befriending this woman, Simone, who's worked there a while, and she's the wine expert. And then Tess is also kind of infatuated with this guy who's the bartender, who's kind of like one of those rough, dreamy kind of, tortured guys. And so into this kind of triangle between these three people, Tess gets an education that's not just in food, but also kind of like growing up and becoming more aware of herself. So it's both a coming of age and also just like a really immersive, character-driven story. And Tess's voice is just really, it's just lush, but it's really accessible too. Her strong voice actually does remind me of Donna Tartt's and My Year of Rest and Relaxation. It's just like a similarly poignant, but also that feeling of like looking back on yourself with a little bit of distance to see how much you learned, but also how naive you and young you were at the same time. It's Sweet Bitter by Stephanie Danler.
I heard so many good things about that book when it came out. It's been on my long list for a while. I got to get to it.
Yeah. Well, clear your schedule. Get ready to cook, because like it will definitely make you hungry.
Nice. I like never do this anymore, but I got really torn about my answer to this question. And so I have two books for you. You said you preferred a female point of view, but I just wanted to direct your attention to Dancer by Colin McCann, because this is a novel about the Russian dancer Rudolf Nureyev. And it is so intense. Like, talk about a book that's just like about an obsession with ballet and perfection and performance and the ways that that can just sort of shape a life. Like, this book is such a dive into that world. And also, because Nureyev, you know, came from Russia and went to New York and has this really intense sort of story of how he became the sensation that he did become. And then, you know, the secrets about his life, you know, being closeted and being gay. And you know, it goes from, you know, World War II to New York in the 80s. Like, there's so much going on historically around this time period. And there's so many characters in history that make appearances in this novel. So it's like, it just really is, I think it will scratch that itch. It's just not about a female character. So I wanted to shout that one out. My other pick for you is Point by Brandi Colbert. Or Colbert. I'm never positive which one it is. But this is a great book. It's a YA technically, but I think it's definitely got crossover appeal because it is dealing with some really intense and timely issues. And this comes with a trigger warning for eating disorders, as I guess actually do a lot of books about the ballet world. But just FYI. So it's about a young girl named Theo who is, you know, sort of trying to get back on her feet after a bunch of things have gone wrong for her. She's on her way to becoming an elite ballet dancer, and she's like, you know, dating guys and, you know, doing her thing. But the thing that has happened is one of her oldest friends disappeared 4 years ago, and he suddenly has returned to town. And this sort of throws Theo back into all of the events of 4 years ago and what she's been trying to forget or maybe suppress and what has happened to her friend. And, you know, was he abducted? Like, what was he kidnapped? What happened there? And how does she deal with his return now? And it's really, 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 really intense. And she knows some things that she's not allowed to tell people. And she's struggling with, you know, just so many different things. So there's a lot of feelings, obviously, on the page. And there's a lot of really difficult moments. And, you know, especially as a grown-up reading this book, it's just like, oh, your heart aches because there are these moments in your life, whether you're a teenager or an adult, where it's just so unclear to you what the right thing to do is. And this book really digs into that. So you said you were looking for, like, you know, philosophical observations, but that aren't super abstract. Like, this is a lot about, you know, how do we make choices and what if there's no good choices? So I think this one will also suit you very well. So again, that's Point by Brandi Colbert is what we're going to go with there.
Cool.
Okay. Question three is from Nicole, who says, I'm hoping you can help me find more reading material on capital punishment. My interest in it peaked when I was reading Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson, and I later followed it up with The Sun Does Shine by Anthony Ray Hinton. I'd prefer nonfiction, but I'll take whatever you can give me. All right, what do you got, Sarah?
So I actually do have a novel. So it's not nonfiction, but I think it'll give you a similar kind of really gripping connection to capital punishment. And that is Burial Rites by Hannah Kent, which opens with the words, "They said I must die." And it is it's a novel that takes a look at this historical, just kind of infamous historical case in Iceland, where this woman who, she was executed in 1829 for supposedly killing her master and another man and burning their bodies. So at the time, Iceland had kind of had this break where they weren't doing capital punishment, but her case just really took hold, and it was just a lot of sensational stuff. She got accused of you know, being a witch or the devil. It just really stirred up a lot in the area. So she is sent to wait out her final days before she's going to be executed. And she goes to this remote farm where she's housed by this family. And, you know, initially they're like suspicious of her and, you know, think it's such a clear cut thing. But then the more time they spend with her, the more they realize, you know, maybe this isn't quite as straightforward. And, you know, is capital punishment really the right way to mete out justice here? So this, it's got this gorgeous setting, very atmospheric, but also just a really strong voice, too, from the main character. And I think it just looks at the complexities of a case like that, and especially from a woman's perspective, you know, how women were treated as far as crimes go, and then kind of just like the implications of that. So that's Burial Rites by Hannah Kent.
You know, I did that book with a book club. Actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When I worked at the bookstore, we did that book in the mystery book club because there, you know, it's not like a straightforward mystery, but there is some, you know, questions about like what actually happened. Mm-hmm. And it was a really interesting discussion. Yeah. We had a good time with that one. Let's see. So I picked a book that I haven't actually read, and I'm not sure I will because this is not really my wheelhouse of reading. Although I'm like happy to read articles on it, but like a full book is a lot for me. But everyone at Book Riot, like basically, has recommended this book, and that is The Fact of a Body, A Murder and a Memoir by Alexandria Marzano Lesnovich. And so this is a memoir, and the Alexandria is starting a summer job at a law firm in Louisiana, working to help defend men accused of murder. She is very anti-death penalty. She's a child of two lawyers. This has like been a lifelong belief of hers, and she's, you know, doing work on this. And then she's reviewing some old tapes, and a convicted murderer's face comes up on the screen, and she has this intense visceral reaction, and like want and is discovers this feeling of like wanting him to die. And so she's really shocked by this reaction. And so she starts to dig deeper into the case because something about it is causing this reaction in her. And she's cannot quite figure out what it is. And so she is like digging into this old, you know, case and then thinking about her own childhood and her own life. And then there are, you know, she's not the only one who's sort of involved in this. So it's a, it is, it's sort of like a true crimey memoir mishmash, that does all of these things while also tackling the question of like, you know, what is there, are there exceptions, or, you know, can you have a belief that covers all instances? And what do we believe about forgiveness, and what do we believe about the law and about crime? So I think this will definitely give you, the questions and that you're looking for, as well as being, you know, sort of like a thrillery version of this. So, again, that's The Fact of a Body, a Murder and a Memoir by Alexandria Marzano Lesnovich.
It's such a good book.
Oh, you've read it. Okay, good.
I did. And it was really one of my favorites of the year. It was just, it's very intense, like you said. But I also found that the way that the author examines some of these things, she puts a lot of scrutiny in her beliefs and then her past. And, you know, it's just so gripping. And like, I could not forget like some of the passages and her writing and the way she would describe things. And you're right. Like, it does kind of suck you in with this mystery almost in a way. And really those unanswered questions. But yeah, it is very intense, but I would say it's one of the most memorable books I read in the last like 5 years.
Oh, wow. Well, here you go.
Yeah, it's really good.
Nice.
Okay, so our next question comes from Mallory, and she asks, I was wondering if you could help me find some mystery/suspense books that involve two detectives who are a married couple. I've been binging through Agatha Christie's Tommy and Tuppence series, and I'm absolutely obsessed with their dynamic. Anything that involves a married couple or romantic couple solving crimes together and bantering is right up my alley. For this, I'm recommending In the Bleak Midwinter by Julia Spencer Fleming, which is the first in a series featuring a couple. So the first novel kicks off, and it's set in this kind of sheltered, secluded Adirondack town in New York during a very snowy winter. So it's kind of perfect to read right now. And it looks at the relationship between a reverend who is a veteran and she's new to the area. It's a quite a conservative and kind of traditional community. And she's a little like has a little friction towards that. And then the police chief who they kind of get together on this one case where a baby is found in front of the church. So they want to search for like who the parents are, and then the case just gets deeper and deeper from there, and it just really brings in some of these underlying tensions in the community. So I'd recommend this because their relationship is, like it's complex, but I also think it just feels really authentic and driven by some of the emotion of actually trying to solve some of these cases that just are grueling and really hit you in the feels. So to be around someone else who's you're trying to solve that with a similar priority, it just brings out this kind of, I think, really unique dynamic between the two. So that is In the Bleak Midwinter by Julia Spencer Fleming, and is the first of her Reverend Claire Ferguson and Chief Russ Van Alston series, which is up to 8 books now.
Oh, wow. I'm like very tickled by the idea of like a veteran reverend minister solving crimes. That's really interesting to me. I'm going to have to check that out. Okay, so I picked like the banteriest book I could think of, which is To Say Nothing of the Dog by Connie Willis. This is like a time travel search for the MacGuffin mystery. in 21st century Oxford, time travel is available, but only to historians. And you can go back, but you can't bring anything forward. There's all kinds of reasons, you know, time travel reasons why you can't do that. And they can't change anything, but they can sort of go research the history that they would otherwise only be able to read about. When you're time traveling, like, you get, like, basically the time travel version of jet lagged. And the main character, Ned Henry, has just gotten back from really too many jumps and gets sent on yet another mission, but his mission instructions get garbled. So he basically has no idea where he's going or what he's doing there. And he's been told that his contact, like another Oxford historian, is already in this time, in 1940, and will, like, meet him and give him instructions, but he doesn't know who the contact is. So he's like, he arrives in 1940 England, and he's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. I don't know who I'm supposed to talk to. I have no idea what's going on. Like, what is happening to me? He gets absorbed into this boating party and ends up at this, you know, house where they're doing, like, seances, and there's a crazy dog and a cat. And in the meantime, he's getting random instructions from, you know, his present, which is the technical future, about what he's supposed to be doing. And the love interest, I don't want to spoil anything, but the love interest shows up, and they have the best banter. Oh my gosh, I love it so much. It's just really rompy and delightful, and I love the premise. And it's just super, super, super fun. So it's sadly, I think it's the only of the Oxford time travel books that has a couple solving a mystery, but there are other books in the series if you end up liking sort of the general vibe of it. So that's To Say Nothing of the Dog by Connie Willis. Okay, let's see. It is time for our second sponsor, which is Nurex. So imagine if you could chat with doctors anytime from your phone, get prescribed online, and get birth control delivered straight to your door every month with automatic refills. Enter Nurex, the game-changing company that is here to make getting birth control easier. So this offers end-to-end care without ever having to leave your home. Fewer doctor visits, no more pharmacy lines, no more forgetting to pick up your refill, which is a story I know very well. And if you don't have insurance, it is a very affordable option. And if you have insurance, it could be completely free. So all you have to do is go to their website or their app and answer a few health questions for the certified doctors. They carry over 50 brands of birth control, so you can choose your go-to. Or if you're trying to figure out what the right one is for you, their medical team will help. And it is all safe and secure and HIPAA compliant. So that is a very convenient option. I know a lot of us have struggled with having enough time and mental space to make sure that that gets done, which is obviously very important if you are on it to get it done on a regular schedule. So you can go to nurx.com/booked, booked, and you can get a $20 credit and birth control at your doorstep in less than a week. So again, that's nurx.com/booked, booked, for a $20 credit. Thank you so much for sponsoring the show. All right, our next question is from Rebecca T., who says, I recently read The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid and absolutely loved it. I'm looking for recommendations for books that take place in old-timey Hollywood that might be similar. I enjoy stories told from different points of view, time jumping from past, present to past, and wouldn't say no to some mystery. Thank you in advance for your help. What you got?
I have A Touch of Stardust by Kate Alcott. Which is definitely one of those breathtaking, old-timey, just transportive kind of feelings to it. It's about a young woman who leaves the Midwest, and she's intent to become a screenwriter in Hollywood. This is in the early 30s, so not exactly the time it is now for having a woman be a screenwriter. But she takes this job in the publicity office of a powerful producer, David O. Selznick, who was working on producing the 1931 film Gone with the Wind, which stars famous actor Clark Gable. So Julie becomes an assistant to the actress Carol Lombard, who is at the moment having a very public but semi-taboo relationship with Clark Gable. And Julie just kind of just gets swept up into this world. very close, like an that kind of access feeling. Like she's very close to that and access to various famous directors and actresses in this really formative time of classic Hollywood. And there's a similar feel to The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, because there's a connection between Julie and Carol. They're both from the same hometown in Indiana. So their relationship, they kind of have like a similar feeling of moving from a small community and then kind of just being thrown into Hollywood when it's really getting going. So I feel like you'll definitely be thinking like you're right there with her. Like the author, Kate Alcott's done a lot of research. And it's just that sort of sweeping, romantic perspective, I think. So that's A Touch of Stardust by Kate Alcott.
Nice. Yeah, my pick also is very much a sort of, when I think back on this book, it's like got a gauzy, dreamy feel to it. So my pick for this question is Laura Lamont's Life in Pictures by Emma Straub, which has also a very gauzy, sort of dreamlike feel to it when I think back on it. It is the story of a young girl who is born in 1920 in Wisconsin, in Door County, as Elsa Emerson. And she is actually raised sort of on the stage. Her family owns the Cherry County Playhouse, and she loves being part of the plays. But then tragedy strikes her family. And so she leaves Wisconsin and flees to Los Angeles. She gets married to a guy and they go to Los Angeles, and she's there, and she actually does get discovered. Like, that was her goal, and she actually does it. And he renames her, and, you know, she changes her hair and her life and all of these things, and leaves behind her sort of previous life to become this totally new person named Laura Lamont. And I'm trying to remember, because you said in the question that you liked it when the narratives alternate past and present. There are two storylines here. I cannot remember how the narrative unfolds because it's been so long since I read it. It came out in 2012, and I think I read it before it in galleys. So I don't exactly remember the structure, but it definitely, you're getting this very sort of alternating view of what it was like for her before she became part of the studio system and, you know, an award-winning actress, like a genuine movie star, and what she was like before that, but also sort of these, you know, the dark bits of what that was like for her as well. And she has a fair amount of darkness in her life. So it's a very intense book in a lot of ways, but it does have that sort of dreamy Hollywood, you know, golden age feel to it. So I think you'll dig it. So again, that's Laura Lamont's Life in Pictures by Emma Straub.
All right. Our next question is from Angie. And their question is, I really love the book The Sparrow by Mary Doria Russell, and the movie Arrival is one of my favorites because I love the glimpses that both works give of linguists. I am looking for more books about linguists or linguistics, fiction or nonfiction, as long as the nonfiction is accessible to a regular non-academic. Thanks, Angie. So I'm going to recommend The Study of Animal Languages by Lindsay Stern, which is actually a new release February, today actually. And it's about this couple. They're both professors at a Rhode Island university. The husband is a philosophy professor, and his wife, Prue, is she's a linguist studying biolinguistics and specifically bird languages. So there's some disconnect between the two of them. First of all, they're opposite personalities. Ivan, the husband, is very logic-driven, very rational, and Prue's just a little bit more whimsical, more emotional. And like the theme of linguistics, they have a lot of trouble communicating themselves. So when Prue's father comes to town to deliver a lecture, it's kind of right at the heart of her battle for tenure. And while she's had a very successful career as an academic, Ivan, his career is just not at the same level of prestige as hers. He just hasn't seen as many opportunities come by. So at the heart of this, there's debates over linguistics and the ethics of studying animal languages. And so there's that linguistic element, and then also looking back at the theme of communication and how we feel like there's a breakdown in what we can and cannot express, specifically through the lens of this married couple. So it's just come out, and it's got like almost like a satirical kind of On Beauty by Zadie Smith kind of feeling to it, where it shows you kind of like these really tiny arguments that get really blown very large in academia. It examines language on multiple levels. And I think that if you're looking to learn more about linguistics, but also like the people who study those languages and how that affects their lives, this is a good pick. So that's The Study of Animal Languages by Lindsay Stern.
That sounds so interesting. I picked a sci-fi novel for you because you talked about The Sparrow and Arrival, and I love both of those things. If you have not yet read the short story that Arrival is based on, it's called The Story of Your Life and Others. Yes, The Story of Your Life and Others. And it's in a short story collection that's just amazing. And Arrival is a pretty good adaptation, actually, I think, but the story is even better. So just for the record, definitely read the original story. But I picked Ammonite by Nicola Griffith for you. This is, technically she's an anthropologist. Marg is an anthropologist, but she goes a lot into linguistics in this book, and I think it will give you that same sort of feel as The Sparrow and the Ted Chiang book. And this is a fascinating sci-fi novel about a woman. As I said, her name is Marg. She's an anthropologist, and she is being sent to study the population on this isolated planet that is basically controlled by a company. And when humanity sort of arrived on this planet, they discovered humans already there, but who had been remarkably changed by a virus that when the original settlers, human settlers, came to this planet, it killed all of the men, and it killed quite a few of the women, but some survived and then have continued to survive. But clearly their biology has been deeply changed by this virus on the planet. And so the company is trying to figure out if they can like immunize people against this virus and therefore, you know, use this planet for basically resources or, you know, expansion of their own interests. And so they've sent Marg, who knows very well that she's just a tool of the corporation, but she has her own reasons for going. She's testing out a vaccine. She has 6 months of this vaccine when she lands on the planet to do her work. And she is incredibly like dedicated to doing this work because this is a population that's been, you know, isolated from the rest of humanity for a long time. What are their cultures like? Their language shows some really interesting things that she doesn't understand. And she just wants to know. She's really driven by this urge to understand this, what has happened here, to the population of this planet. And what I love about this book is that, you know, Griffith is specifically sort of looking at the history of the gender binary in science fiction and fantasy and what, you know, past sci-fi novels have imagined a civilization that's only women to be like, and sort of pushing back against a lot of those tropes. So this is, you know, this is not at all a stereotypical, like, oh, it's like an idyllic matriarchy, or it's, you know, it's the Amazons. Like, in fact, there's different because it's an entire planet. There are different, you know, groups and tribes and people with different cultures interacting with each other within the planetary structure. And then you have these, you know, Terrans basically coming in, trying to settle here as well, and how they're interacting with the inhabitants. And you also get this view sort of back into the history of the planet and about, you know, a little glimpse of how humanity first got there and what that did to the planet. So there's all kinds of interesting things going on here about colonialism and language and evolution and biology. And then she personally has a really heartbreaking personal story. And so, you know, it's about love and family and identity and loss. And oh, man, there's so much going on here. So I think it's a really good comp for both The Sparrow and The Story of Your Life and Others / Arrival. And I think you'll really dig it. And it does have that sort of linguist or social scientist vibe to it. So again, that's Ammonite by Nicola Griffith. All right. And our last question is from Rin, who says, I'm kind of obsessed with the works of Ray Bradbury, specifically Dandelion Wine and Something Wicked This Way Comes. I can't seem to find any other books that capture the same sort of nostalgia and enigmatic subtle magic that those books portrayed so wonderfully. Help, please. Oh, what you got, Sarah?
I have The Ocean at the End of the Lane by Neil Gaiman. So I am also a huge Ray Bradbury fan, and I know exactly what Rin's talking about with that nostalgia, but then the sort of magical feeling to...
The dog also knows exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, he's obviously very excited about this pick. So The Ocean at the End of the Lane taps into definitely that mood. And it's about a man who returns to the English countryside to where he grew up. He's coming back for a funeral, but being back puts him squarely in a confrontation with his memories of when he was a kid and this one stretch of supernatural events that happened after a man committed suicide in a car down the road from his farm. So during that time, he had befriended his neighbor, Letty Hemstock, who lived with her grandma and her mother in a house. And they had this kind of magical vibe. Like Letty said that this pond in the back of behind their house was actually an ocean. And when he's younger, you know, it's kind of easier to buy into that magical feeling and thinking that, you know, things can be mystical and they can be magical and they can be real at the same time. But as he grows older, he loses that. So once he comes back, he's remembering that very vividly that summer when the series of supernatural events kind of just stacked up one after the other and really pushed him into the Hemstock women's lives as they tried to help him. So I think, you know, like Bradbury, it looks at that time in your childhood where everything seems possible, but you're also just on the cusp of when, you know, maybe some cynicism starts to settle in. And I just think it's a really beautiful work that would speak to a lot of Bradbury's language and also themes. So that's The Ocean at the End of the Lane by Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. They do have a very similar feel. I kind of came at this question sideways, and I picked for you Mama Day by Gloria Naylor, which if you've been listening to the show for a while, you'll have heard me recommend before. It's a fascinating book. It's much longer than anything that Bradbury ever wrote, really. And it is not about kids. I'm totally familiar with the works you're talking about, and I know what you're talking about, so bear with me. But this is about a young woman named Coco who grew up in on a small island off the coast of Georgia with her great aunts, basically. And she leaves to go to New York and try to, you know, make it in the city, find a man, like find a career, like decide who she's going to be in the world. And she does meet a man and marries him, George, and she brings him back to meet the family. And this is sort of the story of how she met him and then also what happens when she brings him back. And the thing about her family is that it's very unusual. It is Mama Day is like 90 years old. She's a very respected healer. She's believed to have powers with herbs and other things, and people come to her for advice and also, you know, kind of spells. And she lives with her sister Abigail, and they together are sort of the memory keepers in a lot of ways for both the family and the island. And the island has its own very intense history. It was originally a plantation that then was inherited by a woman who had a black woman who was a slave and had children by her master, and so the island has been inherited by her descendants, and it's got this really intense history. And this book, I will tell you, is a heartbreaker. Like, oh, I cried. I literally cried when things happened. I won't tell you what the things were, but it has that sort of meandering, like it's the real world, but then right underneath or just along the top, there's this layer of magic that Bradbury does so well. It does that same thing. And it feels like a really intimate, personal story, but then it just has such big feelings and ramifications. So it's both very intimate and very big at the same time, which Bradbury's work often feels like to me. So I think it isn't the same, but I think it's similar in interesting ways. And I think you would really dig it. And actually, like Bradbury, like sometimes, you know, Bradbury takes a while to sort of get to where he's going. And this book also is not a direct, like, linear narrative. It takes a little while. It moves around. But if you're willing to hang with it, it's so worth it. This book is one of my all-time favorites that I've read in the past 5 years. I just love it so much. So again, that's Mama Day by Gloria Naylor. And that is our show. Thank you, Sarah, so much for coming on and recommending stuff with me.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, good. And thank you all for listening. If you would like to leave us a rating and or a review on Apple Podcasts, we would love that. We'd love to see the feedback, and it helps other folks to find the show. Thank you to today's sponsors for making the episode possible. You can find us on social media, although I'm taking a little break. Sarah, where can people find you?
I'm on Instagram at SarahBookGoddess. That's Sarah with an H.
Wonderful. And we will talk to you next time.